Welcome to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please, or interview the program. I'm your host, Wim Lou. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. One last show for the season, and shortly we will be going to Darko Rajakovic's end-of-season press availability when he does eventually take the podium. He is scheduled to take it at 11. Would love to have been there, but at the same time, you know, the show is on, and I'm very much looking to hear what Darko is going to say. Blake, how you doing, man?
I'm good. So I do have an eye on this, so I'll try to keep the questions brief. But you did manage to make it down to the press availabilities yesterday, the ones that didn't take place during our show. So you got there in time for Scotty and IQ and Grady. Any takeaways? Any big thoughts from those?
Well, first off, big thanks to Raptors PR for setting up lunch for everybody. That was quite nice. But putting that aside,
you want to go into the details of the spread?
I think, I don't know, there was like patties, there was actually a lot of carbs, to be honest. There was also like these like thick pizza slices that kind of like focaccia style. Yeah, and then some watermelon, you know, some snacks. It was great. It was a great time. No one wants to hear that. What did the players talk about? I mean, it was a generally pretty positive attitude. It was actually really funny. Emmanuel quickly almost got a parking ticket because he parked in the parking lot just as like the attendants were coming through, and so he averted the parking ticket. Thank goodness. But yeah, he took the podium. He was in great mood. He's like, "Good morning, everyone," and we were like, "Emmanuel, it's 1:30."
Yeah,
it's 1:30, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you could tell I just woke up." In any case, yeah, it was. I don't know. I mean, it was a pretty cheery atmosphere, even though the season obviously didn't go that well. I thought Scotty spoke really well. I think that's something that goes along with the maturation of Scotty is like. You know, I think he's gotten better and better at sort of being able to express what he wants to say and also sort of what he feels on behalf of the team. It is a fairly important thing. And I thought he spoke well. He spoke really maturely about sort of his position, really, really talked about, you know, wanting to take leadership over the team, you know, speaking to guys during timeouts and huddles. That was a consistent messaging across. He referenced the play where in the last game 82, he gone on Grady about a bad closeout in the first quarter. And for the rest of the game, Grady was making really hard closeouts in the right way. And, you know, Scotty and the rest of the team really encouraging him to do so. Like, even small wins like that are really, really important. And we had that conversation yesterday about sort of who's going to take ownership. I think Scotty really has that intent. And then the other big takeaway is just unprompted, everybody just praised Garrett Temple. Like, I don't know if they had, like, a group chat and they were like, "Hey, it's Garrett Temple Day." But, like, everybody talks so much good things about the presence that Garrett Temple did. Because, of course, you can't really talk about the product. They won 25 games and lost 57. But at least in terms of the people in the organization, of course, start leading with Darko, who also drew really strong reviews, you know, at least the people are happy with each other.
Yeah, that's good. That's, I mean, like we talked about yesterday, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is what happens on the court and you know, guys being better, Darko being better, et cetera. But as you go through a lean year, as you get ready for the offseason, as you're trying to find that right balance of optimism but long-term development next camp, those are the important things that help stabilize and help you kind of navigate those lower points if they come back up again. So that's important. The Scotty leadership stuff is great. You know, would have liked one of those guys to be like, "Yeah, I loved Garrett Temple, a great teammate, a great hit every week on the Raptor show with Will Lou." They couldn't get that specific, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Hopefully they were checking it out and someone's like, "Hey, you know, I learned how to do media weekly from Garrett Temple. I'll do more media."
First of all, you got to be as good as Garrett Temple. All right.
So you don't have to be as good as Garrett Temple to get invited on the show.
No, you're right. You're right. But at the same time, it'd be very ideal if you could be as well-spoken as Garrett. I actually would have loved for Garrett to have a season ending press conference, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Oh. But in any case, we do have Darko Rajakovic taking the podium, so we're going to cut to that feed.
Next time.
Separately.
Darko, quite a few of your players were here yesterday and speaking about, you know, they got a lot of optimism for things next year. And I'm just wondering why, if you share in that optimism and, you know, is it And what's it based on, given there was so much, so little time that anyone who might project to be on the team next year?
Yes, I definitely share that optimism. That optimism comes from us having very good situation with very young core. We have players that like each other. We have players that are very talented young players that have a bright future, and players that are really ambitious and they want to put a lot of work in. That's the first part for me to be very optimistic about the future and what next season holds for us. The other thing is that we have the best front office in NBA. We have amazing ownership. We have amazing fan base. We have very good coaching staff that's working and pouring into players every single day. We have Alex McKechnie, who is the best in the world in what he does. We have the best media people over here. We have the best media coverage in the NBA. So why not be optimistic? Why not to be optimistic?
Jericho, this was obviously your first full season as an NBA head coach. How did it live up to your expectations?
Well, if you would ask me this like 12 months ago or when I was interviewing for a job, I could probably not foresee everything that came our way. And if you would ask Phil Jackson, he would tell you the same thing. I don't think he had a chance to see anything like this. It was a season of a lot of challenges, a lot of changes, a lot of stuff that were happening on the court with trades and changes, and also off the court, things that we could not control. But at the same time, it was amazing opportunity to learn, to see how people react in those situations, to see how everybody is resilient through that process, and how everybody at the end came together. The big reason why everybody's sharing this optimism is that we stick together with each other, and we have a clear path what we want to do in the future.
You talked about player development and how to program basically for every player on the roster. What's your own development this summer?
My first part of my development is to get some sleep. that's number one. And then I kind of like have every season I have my own way of preparing. I like to watch different teams, different leagues. I like always to catch up to see on some new tendencies in the basketball world. I like to read books. I like to work on myself as a leader, what I can do better. I have a list of stuff that, you know, during the course of the season I'm thinking about. And because of the nature of business, I don't have enough time to address that during the regular season. Now in off season, there is going to be more time for me to reflect and to learn and to be better prepared to handle different situations ahead of me.
What did you learn about yourself as a coach during the season?
For pretty much my whole career, I was always coaching teams that had positive records and winning and competing to win championships and all of that. Actually, as a head coach, I had only one losing season, and that was my second year in the G League. I think what I learned about myself is just that ability to keep the big picture, you know, in the first plan. It's not easy to lose, and it's not easy to stay on the sideline. And you saw me, Doug, standing with our guys until the last second of the last game. And that's how I operate. I really believe in our guys, and I'm going to pour everything into them. What I really learned there is importance of keeping the big picture and main thing the main thing.
Yesterday, the players were talking a lot about how you're forming off the court relationships with them. And that was kind of the main thing, is that they were saying, you know, as much as They appreciate what you do on the court. It was more of the off-court stuff that really stuck with them. Why is it so important for you to form those off-court relationships with the players, and how do you think it helps them when it comes to basketball?
That's a very good question. I first of all, it's so easy to look at NBA players and to judge that everything is perfect in their lives, that everything is easy, because what everybody sees, they see those guys for 2.5 hours on bright lights, you know, and all of them, they're much more than just basketball players. They have families, they have interests, they have confidence, they have lack of confidence, they're dealing with so many stuff that you and I and everybody else is dealing in our lives. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that and for them to know that I stand behind them, that this organization stands behind them. I think it gives them extra motivation to give back, to be the best they can be on the court for us and for themselves.
Scotty was saying yesterday that he was really trying to use the time away when he was not able to play to grow as a leader. And certainly from our vantage point, we could see him being very vocal on the bench. In what ways did you see him grow as a leader as the season went on, and especially during the time when he wasn't able to play?
Very good observation, and it's kind of like, to be honest with you, it's kind of like night and day. Comparing start of the season when he was timid and not sure what he's about to say and how to approach his teammates. We were working a lot on that and then building his voice with the team. And in a certain way, it came like a blessing for his leadership not to be on the court for those last 20 whatever games he did not play, because he was able to see the game through different lenses. He was able to appreciate the game even more, because he's not out there and competing. And like I always tell guys, never take for granted stepping on NBA court. You know, it's such a privilege. And I think that having leaders like we had in Ted Young, and especially second part of the year with Garrett Temple, it really helped him to see different side of it and the importance of good leadership and setting the tone with example, but also learning how to talk with your teammates. Not every teammate is the same. With some guys, they need hugs. Some other guys need, come on, let's go pick it up. And the only way to learn that is if you try. You know, and he had a lot of those situations being on the bench. Like, his voice was amazing, and supporting teammates, but also keeping them accountable. You know, he would come to me and say, "Coach, what coverages we're in?" He would double check with me before talking to players, making sure that everybody's on the same page. So I think all of this has created a lot of hunger with him, that he's going to be motivated to come next year as a better leader, as a better player.
You mentioned Garrett, and I wanted to ask you about him as well, because Scotty mentioned that opportunity to sit and watch games with him and kind of see what kind of a leader he is. Obviously, you can't measure Garrett's impact with this team looking at the numbers and the minutes and the games and all that. So for people that don't have that perspective that you guys have on the inside, how would you describe what Garrett's meant to this team this year?
If you would see his competitiveness in the play groups that we had since day one, if you would see his commitment to his teammates, all the conversations that he had with those guys on the sideline, you know, not just in a game, it's just like scouting, preparation, getting everybody on the same page, understanding what we need to do, how we need to do it. All of that went a long way. But then him stepping on the court and actually doing it and, you know, putting his body on the line and taking a charge or getting a steal or diving on the floor, that's like, wow, like what he was preaching whole year, that's not empty story. Like, he really stands behind that. And that's not leadership of Garrett Temple. That's leadership is a shared leadership from everybody in the organization. You know, you need to lead by example first, and then people will follow you. You know, then you will be able to use your voice. And I thought that that Garrett did outstanding job with our young core over here, and that we have a great leader in him.
Are there specific areas that you're hoping to work with Scotty on for next season?
Yes. Do you want me to share with you? Yes. So I think, as you could see, he's just tapping in his ability to post up. I think he is very capable to score from low block, but also he's going to be attracting a lot of attention defensively. They're going to send two players to him, and now his playmaking ability can really flourish. You know, I think him playing on the ball is a natural step for him and for us. Interchangeable point guard together with Quickly or RJ. I think it's a next evolution for our team. And then defense, you know, every time when I talk to Scotty about his development, trust me, he's the first one to keep bringing defense, you know. And he wants to be considered the defensive player of the year. And I'm going to support him in that regard very much so. And next year, when I put him on the best offensive player on the other team, there is not going to be for him, like, complaining, why I have to do that. You told me you want to be that guy. So we're going to really stretch him and help him in every possible way to be the best two-way player he can be. As you guys can see, the way he's pushing the ball in transition, his unselfishness, his passing ability, his ability to score in the paint, continued improvement in the three-point shooting. All of those areas are areas for him that he can make next step.
What does Grady have to do this summer to make another leap? Obviously, he made a big leap in the second half of the season after he went on the program and everything. What would you expect from him this summer, and sort of what's the plan for him?
Besides the obvious one that he needs to work on his body, you know, he's 20-year-old. At the beginning of the season, I said that he looks like he's 16. Then he looked like 16 and a half. Now he looks like 17. There is a natural thing that's going to happen with just him getting older. I think his body is going to fill in. And then there is a lot of work to be done for him to get stronger, to withhold the contact better, and to be more physical on defensive end as well. I think that's number one thing for him. I thought that his corner progression, playing from corners, getting shots, the reads, cuts, driving from that area of the floor, is something that he did really good job this year. In off-season, they're going to look to expand his box, to put him in different situations that he can play out of and continue to grow in that aspect as well.
You mentioned watching other games of basketball, trying to pick up on tendencies and certain things that are maybe on the cutting edge. When you look around the NBA and see the teams that are the most successful right now, what are you seeing, whether it's from a tactical perspective or about skill sets, what are you seeing that you feel like you guys need to emulate to get to that level?
And when you look at the best teams around the league, you really see a lot of skill. You see that their best players are very hard to handle. You know, that you're always hitting into, like, how do we guard this guy? Do we need to send two on him? Do we have to rotate? What are those attacking points on the court? And I think that really translates into our summer plans to develop our players to become more and more of that. You know, that they're more of a shooting threat. They're more of a driving, finishing at the rim threat, that they're very capable to handle defensive situations better in one-on-one situations, that we don't have to put two on the ball. So I think it's overall development of players, because at the end of the day, when you watch NBA playoffs and, you know, I know what I see every single year, like all of those teams in the first round of playoffs, they run, I don't know, 20, 30 plays that gets cut down to 15, cuts down to 10. Then you watch NBA finals and it looks like they're not running plays. They're running very simple actions. Why? Because their players is so good in those situations that it's so hard to guard. And my goal is to develop our guys, not just over the summer, but full next season and in the future, to become really, really hard to handle in one-on-one situations.
Gary's numbers kind of this year. How would you assess his season as he heads into free agency this year?
Gary Trent?
Yeah.
Gary Trent, I don't know what numbers you're talking about, but Gary Trent is the best spot-up three-point shooter in the league. Gary Trent, as the season went on, was really able to diversify his game as well, to score much more off of cuts. I thought that he improved his finishing around the rim, especially off 2 feet. When you look at just like numbers production, I agree, obviously, that his numbers dip down, but I think that his overall game improved as this season went on. Gary is a player that's extremely hard worker. He shows up every single night, every single practice. He was a very important voice for us as well. That was another interesting one, to see him from being very quiet at the beginning of season to actually, you know, speak up when we go through our scouting reports, that his leadership and voice went a long way. Bless you. Working out with together with Grady. So I think that he made a lot of strides that not necessarily are showing up on a box score. And you could see Gary as well this year that he was passing the ball more than he did in the past. So I think there were some very, very positive stuff in his game this year.
As a team, there were some really positive numbers, expected efficiency in half court, you know, percentage of possessions with paint touch. How do you think your offensive systems, your playbook, held up over the season? What do you want to keep for next year, and what might you want to change?
We were obviously with different personnel, different players. We were trying to simplify. We were trying to find what best fits those guys. And it just felt that there was no moment that we had some continuity over stretch of games that we can stick with something. It was like, especially second part of the year, there was so much change. I think one theme that was constantly there is our paint touches, ability to score in transition. I think it was our ability to create for each other, to create open shots, and our unselfishness, just ability to move the ball and to have a potential assist high during the whole season. I think that's something that we can really build on. As you could see, we were really trying to develop our off-ball game as well, playing with cuts, playing in space, recognizing what are those situations. And, you know, it's different when you have different guys who are running offense through. It looks differently when you have Kelly in those spots. It looks differently when you have some other personnel in those positions. So I think that we have a very intriguing personnel to have a very good starting point for us. And obviously, I'm going to use the summer to watch a lot of film and to see what fits best. And we'll see how roster is going to shake up by the start of the training camp. And based on that, we're going to be always making necessary adjustments. But the way I want our team to play is to play for each other, to move the ball, to be aggressive, attacking the paint, and to go from there.
And on that note of personnel that maybe fits better what you guys are trying to do, when it wasn't for long, but when you had Quickly, RJ, Scotty, and Pirtle on the floor, those four, you guys actually blew the doors off opponents. Their net rating was huge. Does that feel like a number that matters, or is that something that, you know, wasn't long enough and you sort of want to see how it works before you decide on what to build around?
My eye test tells me that there is a lot of potential there. And a lot of opportunity for the growth. But at the same time, I don't want to look at a small sample and say that's it for, and to take it for granted. You know, I think there is definitely things that we can do better offensively and defensively with that group there. And I'm excited to see those guys come back in a training camp. And I'm sure they're going to look physically and skill-wise, they're going to look different. And it's going to be about, you know, putting our egos aside and really trusting each other and put winning on its first place, because winning is why we're here and that's what we want to develop.
You're going to have some flexibility, or not you, but the front office will have some flexibility in terms of draft picks, potentially three. There's some range of options in terms of what you might do in free agency, etc. what, as a coach, I'm presuming you're going to get consulted, what does this team need?
Every team needs the same thing. It needs great players, and that's where I'm really excited. That flexibility that you're talking about, and potential draft picks, and all of that. I mean, Bobby and Masai are the best in business, and they do a really good job of evaluating the talent and putting the team together. So I have absolute trust in them that they're going to build the best roster possible for us.
But I mean, you must get consulted, right? And so
yeah.
Look and go, I need depth in these positions. Obviously, you traded away 3 6-foot-9 guys, your team.
Right.
A lot of nights was very small.
It's the same thing that you're seeing. It's size, it's skill, it's ability to cover multiple positions. It's potentially backup point guard. You know, we're still about to have all of those conversations to really assess what we have and before we head into decision making. But just like I said, I have utmost trust in Masai and Bobby, and we're going to have a lot of conversations this summer. So I'm sure we're going to come up with great solutions for us.
Do you have a sense of how far away this group at full strength? Obviously, there's some stuff that could happen with Gary and even Bruce and others. How close it is from being competitive at full strength?
I think those answers we're going to get once we get in the season and see how guys developed over the summer. And I have high expectations for our guys to put a lot of work in and to get better. But we entered the rebuild process over the course of the season. And this process is never easy and never turns the corner too quickly, you know. So we understand that this is a process, and we understand that we have a lot of work to do over here. We're going to have a lot of patience with our guys, but at the same time, we're entering every single game and every, you know, next season with high expectations to be very competitive and to win as many games as possible.
Jericho, I think it was IQ yesterday that mentioned that you've already started to speak to your players about getting together over the summer, having sort of like loose, sort of organized practices together. What's the timeline that you've set out for them to be in touch? Like, how much rest are they going to get, and like, how soon will they get back to work in whatever form that might take?
Yeah, so guys will take 3 weeks off over here, and after that, everybody is going to start working. I always tell guys, you can help me with this. I don't know if this one is urban myth. I heard about this one, but I never found that article. Somebody, or maybe we can ask Dirk Nowitzki directly. I heard that somebody asked Dirk Nowitzki, what is the biggest mistake you made as a player? And he said, like, 1 year I took 3 weeks off. I didn't do anything. It was so hard to get back in rhythm of working out and in shape, etc. The follow-up question is, like, what your summer looks like? And I always tell players, like, you know, you take 3-4 days off. Maybe you're not doing anything, but after that, play tennis, you know, go for a swimming, you know, go for a run, you know, do weights. You don't necessarily have to do basketball, but you don't want to shut down those high level machines. You don't want to shut them down and keep them in garage, you know. So they need to stay active. So when it's time to go back to basketball, you're not starting from zero. You already at certain level of conditioning and physical shape. So those 3 weeks off that they're going to take, and guys are going to slowly to get into the work. I already gave heads up to our coaching staff. We're going to be traveling quite a bit. We're going to go and see Scotty in Miami, and we're going to go and see Kelly when he spends time in Utah, or when he spends time in Vancouver. We're already working on a scheduling where the guys are going to be over the course of summer, and we're going to be traveling quite a bit to work with them, to meet with their trainers, coaches, to get everybody on the same page so we can work toward the common goals.
Is that schedule any different for the players who will be playing at the Olympics, like Kelly and RJ?
obviously, Kelly and RJ and guys that are going to be play for Canada national team, they're going to have their training camp. I believe it starts on June 27th, something like that. They're going to have a full month of preparation before heading to France. Those guys, obviously, they're going to be peaking in the middle of the summer for competition. And we already had detailed conversations what a summer needs to look like for them, what is the skill look like early in the summer, how we can the best help them and prepare them for the Olympics as well. And then after Olympics, they'll need to take some time off and rest a little bit before they're picking up again. I do think having Olympics and those kind of competitions in the middle of the summer, it's actually more beneficial to NBA players than having it late in August or September, because it gives them a little bit of break after that competition and allows them in September to build up again for NBA season.
RJ's efficiency numbers really took a jump when he joined the Raptors, but he wasn't really getting more wide open shots, at least according to the NBA's data and catch and shoot and corner threes, sort of similar numbers. What do you attribute the rise in those numbers as a 3-point shooter and I guess overall?
I think RJ is a player, he can touch the paint whenever he wants. Like he's so skilled. He's a physical player. He can get all the way to the rim. And my message with him is, don't settle for bad shots, but when you can create great shots. You can create the great shots for yourself, and you can create great shots for your teammates. And that's where his playmaking ability comes in place. With that size and ability to touch the paint, now he can really see the court and find open teammates. I want him to take it to another level, that he takes a lot of pride in that playmaking ability, because that's good for him and that's good for us as a team. I think his 3-point shooting, he did a lot of work with our coaches, with Coach Jama specifically, on catch and shoot shots and spot up shots. And he's really good at when he's not shooting off the dribble or on the lot of move, and he's just catch and shoot threes and with his feet set. And that's something that we got to continue developing and working on. And I think that the mental part of him knowing that he's going to be used on offensive side, that he's going to have touches, that he's going to play off of his teammates, and that he can create, I think gives that confidence and rhythm to a player to shoot the ball with more rhythm when the ball comes to their hands.
You've mentioned the development of the communication in the team, and especially with the younger guys. How, as a coach, do you approach building those skills, especially with these really young players who you mentioned, like maybe are a bit more in tune to technology and stuff like that?
I think a very important thing is to get those guys comfortable with each other, you know. And while talking to guys yesterday during exit interviews, common theme kept showing up. We're all same age, more or less. We like each other. We have same interest. We play video games. We like this or that. When you have common interests, it's much easier to connect, you know. And I'm trying to create opportunities for them that they are aside from, you know, showing up in a locker room and being together on the court. I'm trying to create opportunities for them that they will have chance to connect. Is that a team dinner? Is that going for a bike ride? Is that, you know, whatever we might come up for next year? I think those environments allow them to be more of themselves, to express themselves more as not just like teammates and basketball players, but to get to know each other on a personal level. And that's how trust on the court is built as well, you know. So I'm going to continue doing that. I'm going to continue encouraging them to speak up and to be good leaders. And that leader is not necessarily like best player on the team. It's you can lead whatever role you have on a team. I'm really trying to help guys to feel comfortable in their own skin.
There's been a lot of talk about your offensive system, and I think even with all the changing personnel over the course of the year, I feel like we all got a very good sense of what your offensive philosophy is. You guys had a pretty tough year on the defensive end. Did you feel like you got a chance to express a defensive philosophy and how do you feel like what are the next steps, I guess, that you guys need to take in order to improve on that side of the ball?
Very good question. I think on defensive end, it really comes down to a lot of times it's size, a lot of times it's comfort level, knowing what you need to do on defense, and then that defensive side really depends on communication. On offense, you can play off of each other. You don't have to communicate. You know, you're playing pick and roll, or you touch the paint. If somebody's open, it's pretty clear what you need to do, when to make a pass. But on defense, it really demands high level of communication, high level of trust. You know, I'm not going to jump in a coverage thinking that that's the right thing, but actually I got to listen and trust that my teammate is calling the right coverage. Then knowing the game plan, knowing personnel. And we had a lot of guys, especially the second part of the year, they're playing NBA games for the first time. You know, so them understanding that, you know, that's a hot shooter. You cannot short close out to him and dare him to shoot the ball, you know, or that player, he's amazing offensive rebounder, and not taking it for granted. Maybe he's not going to rebound in this situation. I think knowing league on defensive end is something that really helps. And I think continuity with the team and schemes really helps with that, you know. So when you look at the time and we had Yak on the court, our defense looked better, but we never had chance to see Yak on the court together with Ochai. And I believe that Ochai is a very good defensive player there as well. You know, and players coming in the mid-season and like you're just trying. I felt that it was easier for me to establish that identity on offensive end than that we were able to do it on defensive end. So part of development of our guys this summer is going to be not necessarily just ball handling and shooting the ball. It's going to be defensive side as well. So I'm really excited about this new season and what it brings. My teams always, when I coached as a head coach, they were really good defensive teams and solid defensive teams. So I'm excited to go in the new season and see what we have.
When you think back on this season, what are you most proud of?
Oh, tough one. Good question, but tough one. What I'm most proud of? I would say togetherness of not necessarily just players, roster, coaches, but a whole organization. You know, we were dealt some really tough cards this year. And it was easy to point fingers and say it's his fault, my fault, her fault. And I think that we as organization, every single department of this organization stayed together and we understood what we're going through. And we understand that the only way how are we going to build is doing that, being together and being on the same page. So that's something that I'm really proud of everybody in the organization.
Darko,
last one.
For a new head coach coming into their first off season, what are the challenges in terms of getting up to speed, or maybe from your own experience?
In terms of...
So like when a new head coach is hired, in your case, when you were hired, you know, what is that first summer like? How hectic is it? How hectic was it?
You're talking about last summer?
Sure.
It was very hectic. It was very hectic. So I was on my cell phone 8-9 hours a day, not texting, but actually talking. If you go back and look at some of my early interviews, even summer league, I lost my voice. You know, I was trying to get the best coaching staff, best people, best experts on a team. That was number one. After that, you know, go meet players, go talk to them, see their expectations, their what they want, what they need. You know, then there was a tough decision after summer league. Should I go home or not? And I decided, yes, I should go home, spend some time with my wife and my son. But that turned out to be me showing up in a coffee shop at 8 in the morning and leaving that same coffee shop at 5 p.m. and being on my computer preparing for coaches' retreat and offensive, defensive blue books and how we're going to be doing scouting and all of that. You know, kind of like you're putting the whole system in. You know, so it was a lot of preparation, a lot of, you know, not enough time in a day. So I think we were able to establish a lot of those things in the year one as a culture, and now there's going to be fine tweaks. Now it's a moment where I can really, you know, help trust my assistant coaches even more, how they can, you know, have their imprint in our team. But we have very solid core of our culture going into year two.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you.
All right. That was Darko Rajakovic's end of season press availability. A lot of things he touched on there. We can't get to all of it. There was obviously the heavy tone of positivity, which has sort of been the calling card and the signature trait of Darko. When he begins with saying, got the best organization, the best fans, best front office, he even said the best media. I know that's cap, but still. Very relentlessly positive. I liked what he said about Scotty probably the most. That was my biggest takeaway. He talked about Scotty's growth, not just on the court, but off the court. He mentioned that Scotty was a little timid to start the season. They had to really work on getting him to speak up, talk to the rest of the group. And as the year went on, especially after the injury, which cost him the last 6 weeks of the season, he was able to really speak up, speak his mind. And you saw that tone, like I mentioned at the start of this show, but yesterday in his press availability. And going forward, that's going to be something that's really, really needed. And so that was my biggest takeaway. Blake, what was your biggest takeaway from
that? Yeah, I liked that. I also liked him relaying on, and this isn't a surprise given what the tone was at the start of the season, but that Scotty is asking for, putting his hand up and asking for, hey, I want the toughest assignment next year. I want to be DPOY. I want to be MIP. I want to be six Moy. No. Goodness. He thinks he has being defensive player of the year in him. And we talked a little bit the other day about, you know, what is next defensively. And I think a big component of that is deciding in which way you're going to use Scotty Barnes. And if Scotty is up to the task of being the guy who guards the best player on the other team every night, rather than, you know, being that kind of chaos free safety in the pseudo corner four role, that's important, and it's a good tone setter. Now, you got to live up to that with the actual play as well, but I thought that was good. I think, you know, from hearing Scotty yesterday, from talking to Garrett about it a little bit, it really does seem like it's been a good growing up year for Scotty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, and that's the most important thing, right? Because we had the whole conversation yesterday, but he's going to be the one to lead this group. Yeah. And there's going to be maturation on the court and off the court. And I think on that front, we saw both things hit this year. And so you just want to continue to see more of that. But I love the fact that he's being vocal and taking ownership of the group. We saw multiple examples of that. Even when the camera panned over to the bench and he's just like on the sideline instructing guys and getting really involved. But you also heard, you know, Grady, for example, talk to him about all these little specific things. And, you know, we're going to have to see how his chemistry grows with Emmanuel quickly. That's going to be a very vital two-man pairing. I think there's a lot more on the bone there that they haven't really got to.
Scotty mentioned that yesterday as well, did he not? That he's excited to play a little bit more pick and roll with IQ?
There was, that was actually one of the questions I asked him about how his game fits with IQ and it fits with RJ. He spoke really highly of both of them as well. Especially with IQ, I think there is just more for the two-man game to be played there. I asked quickly that same question and quickly talked about how, you know, what should be special about that pairing is quickly can be the pick, the ball handler, and Scotty screening for him and that creating opportunities. And also Scotty can have the ball and quickly be the one screening for him, and they can sort of flip that pick and roll around. And that's what makes that combination special. I just think they didn't have enough time on the court to fully execute that. So hopefully that specific partnership grows. He also spoke really highly of RJ as well. I think Scotty's words for RJ was like, he can't be guarded one-on-one. He always requires a team or a second defender rotating over because he's always going to the basket. And Scotty really mentioned and really appreciated how many opportunities that created for other guys, including himself, to score as well. I also like what Darko said about Gary Trent. He called him the best spot-up shooter in the game, which statistically is not necessarily true, but like clearly a very strong spot-up shooter. And then I like that he acknowledged that he diversified his game in terms of scoring off of cuts, in terms of improving finishing off to the 2 feet. His overall averages are not as strong as last year. In fact, they're a little bit worse, but you did see those like in between, like the smaller things within the game. And I don't know if that makes you feel more optimistic that the Raptors will be bringing Gary back or not, but I did like that Darko said something about Gary, because I felt like, you know, Gary just doesn't get talked about that much, at least in the official capacity.
So, okay, there are three components to this. The first one is he was 17th in spot up three-point shooting, which is still really, really good. That's high volume. Yeah, I used a pretty high volume cutoff there, 43.1%, and the consistency year over year is incredible. That's going to be the number one thing on his resume when he goes looking for a deal this year. Number two is that I'm not going to take anything anyone says to mean anything about free agency. That's a general feeling that I have anyway. But also last year at Darko's intro presser, they trotted out a bunch of developmental guys, including and talked a bunch about Delano Banton, and then none of those guys were back. So I'm not putting a lot of weight into what's said specifically about players today or even tomorrow with Masai. More to your point, though, yes, I think that Gary deserves a lot of credit for it. And we, I did this last week, and then he had a really bad game after, dragged me into being like, you know what, Gary's had a really good second half of the year, but he's done a lot. He's stepped up from a like maturity and on-court leadership role when so many guys other than him were down. The play trended upward in the right direction. The three-point shooting's always there, but adding those versatility components, would still love to see him be able to make a little bit more of reads for other people off of those situations where he's getting the ball in advantageous spots. But the scoring is so valuable on a team that needs it as bad as the Raptors have this year that it really stood out in the second half of the year. He was probably the most stabilizing force in that last third of the season when the wins weren't coming. But still, you gotta have someone on offense. Someone's going to score 100 points.
Yeah.
Someone's got to organize you. Someone's got to be the guy that gets the ball 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Yeah, I think he gets a lot of credit for how he's handled this season individually and from a kind of on-court leadership perspective. If not, I mean, he doesn't get brought up a ton as part of the like vocal leadership core, which I don't think, you know, fits personality-wise maybe, but certainly from a lead-by-example standpoint.
So there was one question that I really wanted to ask Darko, and I'm really happy that a friend of the program, Joe Wolfon, last ever guest of the Raptors show, Joe Wolfon, asked Darko about sort of what his defensive identity was and did they get a chance to sort of express it. Darko gave a very long answer, talked about the importance of communication, for example, but did you, maybe I just didn't hear it in the proper way, but did you get a satisfactory answer from Darko in terms of, okay, what do the Raptors under Darko Rajakovic want to do on defense?
No, he did what I tend to do, which is say a lot without saying much, actually.
I might just have to go back and listen to it again, because again, it just happened live. I was really perked up, but I didn't get like a, okay, he, X, Y, and Z.
No, he definitely didn't get into, you know, tactical stuff. He talked more about like philosophically and then, hey, the track record of my teams has been everywhere I go, they're good defensive teams, which is true. So maybe that's a little bit of, hey, we don't put the cart before the horse. Like, we need the personnel and we need to develop and we need to build the habits first. Okay. And he's just not in an evaluation stage yet. He also made a comment. He got asked by Lewis Zatzman about the small window where the guys who are going to be here long-term actually did get to play together. And he was like, I'm not putting much into that, like sample-wise either. So I think those things are probably kind of related, that he's just maybe not at that stage yet in plotting out what the defense is going to look like. But I'm with you. I didn't think, I'm not surprised. It's not a criticism of Darko that he didn't really answer the question, I got nothing out of it.
Yeah, because, you know, I did ask Quickly and Grady about this yesterday, and Quickly about defense. I mean, it's fairly general, but he did mention that it's about mindset first and foremost, the will to actually want to play defense, the focus on it, and then of course the experience of like being able to play with each other and knowing each other's tendencies. Well, the reason I asked Quickly is because he was coming from playing under Tibbs, who I'm sure spent a lot of time drilling defense into everybody, so I'm not surprised that he talked about the mentality aspect. You know, he also mentioned that he's a two-way player and that, you know, other guys on the team are two-way players. I would love to see more of that two-way, especially on the defensive end from Quickly on that front. But again, the season was so messy that it's hard to evaluate. And then I asked Grady, and he actually had a really good answer about what he can do to improve on defense. I asked him, I was like, towards the end of the season, we saw you play a lot, and there were certain games like Jimmy Butler was seeking out for one-on-ones, Dennis Schroeder was seeking out for one-on-ones. This was a pattern for the season. And he talked about sort of his goal is to continue working on core strength with Johnny Lee, the trainer. And I think for him to get stronger is going to be a big part of Grady's plan. So I do think certain players certainly have the specific aspect down, but I think maybe just in terms of that specific answer, I didn't get the full thing. But, the other theme to come out of this whole thing, and it's time now for the spicy stat of the day. Well, it's just not a status. This is a spicy take of the day brought to you by new Chunky Spicy Soup. Everybody get fired up. The spicy take and the last one here is just, let's just make sure to bring back Garrett Temple. Everybody spoke so highly about Garrett Temple. He already told us on this show and obviously others as well. But most importantly, he said that he wants to be here again next year if the Raptors will have him. And again, the one takeaway is just everybody had a lot of appreciation for Garrett. It's not like there was a reporter there asking and prompting everyone to talk about Garrett. The players would just bring it up themselves. And yeah, I mean, I think, look, of course, you're going to bring some new rookies into this situation. Team most likely gets even younger as compared to this year. But at the same time, it's very important to have that veteran voice, especially somebody who can, in a pinch, step on the floor and show them how it's done as well. So salute to Garrett Temple. Everyone, Garrett, you already know we love you on the show. We come on the show all the time. And yeah, we got confirmation from the likes of Scotty and Quickly yesterday too, who also spoke quickly of well of Garrett Temple. So let's run that clip too.
Everybody keeps making fun of me because I don't take charges. So he looked at me and just kind of started laughing, and I went over to give him a shake. He's 37 taking charges, so if he can do it, everybody should be taking charges. But nah, he's been great for our team. The mindset he has, the day-to-day grind that he brings, and his energy every day and his knowledge of the game is high. So appreciate him.
Just being able to grow as a leader, just being every day sitting next to Garrett Temple, picking out his mind, watching the way he handles things, and he gets out there on the floor and plays so hard and so passionate. For me, just sitting back and watching that, you know, I just can't wait to get back on the floor and play my heart out. Just seeing the type of vet he is and how he just doesn't take things for granted. You know, that helps me.
There you go. Okay, so that's most of what's going to happen in the offseason. I think if we're going to do a super quick rundown of what to do, resign Quickly, first and foremost. What do you think it's going to come in at?
Somewhere between 20 and 25 at an annual value. I don't know if they try to front load that because this is the small cap hold year and you want to make sure you're well protected when Scotty's Supermax kicks in and things like that. But yeah, 22 if I had to guess.
I'd be pretty happy with 22. I think it's probably going to be 25, between 25 and 30.
Okay.
Yeah. Is Gary back? Is Bruce back?
It's tough. I'll say Gary yes, Bruce no.
Okay.
You?
And probably the same way, actually. And then the three picks, are we going to use all three? If we obviously get the one that is obviously half owed to San Antonio at this point.
No, I'll say they end up using two, and then obviously there'll be some undrafted free agent or whatever in camp as well.
So there will be three new faces there'll in terms of the rookie class.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, even if it's on a two-way or whatever, they always do that.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be an exciting offseason. I know this year, obviously on the Raptor show, you know, we pivoted to 2 hours. We've, you know, tried to expand the programming. I think really more than anything else, it's just the Raptors had a difficult year. So I appreciate everyone for sticking through, not only with us on the show, but also with, the Raptors season as a whole. And, you know, I know whatever the ending was pretty bad, but at the same time, I'm very much going to miss it as soon as, you know, this whole thing wraps up. Tomorrow we'll hear from Masai. I am curious to see what he says as well about this whole thing. But yeah, lastly, obviously, you know, I've already said my piece about this last week, but obviously this is my last show on the Raptor show. It's meant a lot to do this. It's really meant a lot to see all the reaction and all the appreciation. It sort of really affirms that what we did here was really, really special. And I just really appreciate that first and foremost. I realized also listening back to what I said last week, last Friday, when I announced I was leaving, didn't get to say enough about the producers of the show. And I think it starts with Derek Brandeo. I mean, that was Bob McCallum's producer. When I heard that, my ears perked up, but I didn't know who he was as a person. He brought such a liveliness to the program all the time. Great energy, was on top of everything. And of course, the drops, legendary drops. JR, of course, you know who you are, JR. Everyone knows JR, but he is genuinely one of the most hardworking, one of the most warm-hearted people. Jennifer Rolnick, welcome back from vacation. A lot has changed, but also, you know, you have brought such a, you know, great energy and support to this whole group. So I wanted to make sure I shouted out my producers as well. And of course, Ahmed, Alex, Mark Boffo, everybody who contributed, Daniele this year in particular, my goodness, some of the biggest gets, Adam Silver. I appreciate all of you guys so much. So yeah, that's about it. You know, we're going to sign off for the show. And yeah, for the last time, I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please review the program. Thanks once again to producer Almond Bon, our board producer, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick, David Sis, Jared Manitat for helping with the show. And yeah, we will, well, someone will be back to talk to you next season.
Yeah, Jays Talk Plus starts Thursday, by the way, in this same time slot. So I'm still here. Okay. We're just moving over to the Blue Jays.
Let's go,
starting
baby.
Thursday, 11 to 12, moving forward. So see you then.
I can't wait. I'm going to the Jays game tonight, actually.